This is Elizabeth Joyce, and you're listening again to Let's Find Out. That was William Vitalis inviting everybody to open their heart to the world, to build up the bridge towards world peace, and to understand that we certainly can all live together in harmony on this planet. Tonight, we are into January 2013, and nobody fell off the planet yet. I think we're doing okay. I have a wonderful, wonderful guest. This guest is so multi-talented. Not only does he do ebook publishing, but he is a producer of film. And the exciting part about it is that his name is Don Perry. Don Perry does documentaries, and he would love to start doing more spiritual documentaries. He's done some wonderful work in Africa and with the Berlin International Film Festival and Tribeca Film Festival. He's really been honored in his work. And if any of you have written a book and want to put something on film, Mr. Perry is the one to get in touch with. He's a writer-producer for something called Chimpanzee Productions, and when I saw that, I started scratching, and I wanted a banana immediately. He's an independent film and multimedia filmmaker dedicated to producing unique audiovisual experiences that illuminate the human condition and search for identity, family, and spirituality all together. He wants to show the oneness of the world and the emotional ties that we have with each other. He also writes short fiction, fantasy, and paranormal novellas. That's exciting. Prior to his involvement in film, Mr. Perry was an experienced financial and management consultant with wide-range backroading in commercial finance. So therefore, he knows how to set the money aside and budget for film. That's a terrific knowledge to have in his field. Mr. Perry holds a BA degree in international relations and development economics from Williams College. He received his MBA in strategic management from the Peter F. Drucker Center in Claremont Graduate University. Good evening, Don.
Good evening, Elizabeth.
How are you doing?
We're doing extremely well.
Tell us what a personal documentary is and what makes everything so unique and fitting together. I'm so excited to give this information out to our wide audience.
Well, personal documentaries are your life story. It's who you are, the lives that you touched, the things that have happened to you. But what makes them interesting for us as a viewing public, as well as from the perspective of making a documentary, at least in my perspective, is taking the personal and elevating it to the universal. Everybody has a story to tell. Everybody's life has some interesting moment. But after, you know, if you go to a cocktail party and you ask people, well, tell me about your life, after about 15 or 20 minutes, they don't have anything more to say. That's the problem with a lot of personal documentaries.
But don't you think that could be because they're not writers or they're not creative and they might feel that their life is dull, so they go hum and ha because they don't think they've really done anything? But when you talk to them a little further, you find out that they have?
That's very true. And that's really where the next step in terms of developing a documentary comes from, getting a writer. Someone who knows how to probe you with questions so that they can elicit from you the real story, the things that you may not think are very interesting, but again, when elevated to the universal, you've had experiences of things that other people have shared, and the way that you handled those situations contains some kernel of truth, some essential wisdom that other people could benefit from. And that's what working with a writer really, really helps to bring out.
And the other thing is that we have many similar experiences and many similar emotions, but when we talk about it, we feel like, oh, well, that wasn't so big, or that wasn't so, like if the man goes back into the fire and pulls out the young boy, he says, I just did it because it was the right thing to do, instead of thinking that that's amazing.
Precisely.
To do that.
So that's when you're precisely.
Talking about building a story, you're not talking about embellishment and going to into the blizzard of lies and exaggeration. You're talking about bringing out a spiritual element and emotional element that we experience that brings us into a unique feeling of oneness and closeness.
Precisely. So when you talk to the guy who's rushed into the burning house and pulled out the child, saving them, if you really delve deeply into what created him in that moment, at that particular moment in time, mm-hmm. to allow him to be present in order to carry out that act, that becomes part of the interest in building a story as to how, you know, we all know what the event was.
Uh-huh.
But then you want to peel back the layers of the story to find out, well, what is it about this person that caused spirit to put him there at that moment?
Now, do you know what I call that? I call that a divine setup. There are so many of them, Don. And, you know, in my classes, when I teach about divine setups, people don't get it until you show the connection. There's always a connection. We have this saying that Deepak Chopra talks about. There's always a connection. We're connected to everybody. And I'm telling you, I have seen more divine setups where you happen to do this and all of a sudden you're helping somebody, or you happen to do that and all of a sudden you're helping somebody. And it wasn't planned that way.
That's it. I mean, when you start looking at the chain of causality in terms of the events that led someone to be at a particular place or at certain junctures in their life to have certain experiences, you know, part of what I think a real good documentary does is to show us the extraordinariness of the ordinary life, that we elevate what seems to be just run-of-the-mill routine. Oh, I do that. I'm washing the dishes every day, blah, blah, blah. But you elevate it to something that's really larger than life. It's larger than that
particular thing. What you're trying to say is you show the whole picture. And when you show the whole picture, especially with paranormal pictures, fiction, or that paranormal isn't fiction, but people think it is. But if you show the whole picture, you're showing what happens to Don, you're showing what happens to Elizabeth beforehand, and then you're taking it, you're putting it together, and those two experiences make a greater experience.
Exactly. So think of it like everybody's favorite Christmas movie, It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm.
The angel comes and shows George what life would have been like had he not been born. And that's kind of what we try to do in a good documentary. We want to show the world as you've experienced it from your perspective, but to also show the causality behind the scenes that has, in a sense, anointed you in order to play the part, the role that we're all expecting you to play.
Right. And again, I call it a divine setup. I know you call it cause and effect, but it really is. I think it's preset. A divine setup is preset. The two souls that participate in a divine setup agree in the other levels to create that performance so that they can help somebody. The souls already agree before the action even happens.
Right. And people aren't even aware on you know, like our everyday level of experience. They're not even aware that these things are taking place behind the scenes and that at a very, very deep level.
This is what this new fifth dimension energy is, Don. This new, the Mayan calendar that everybody talked about, we're in a new era and we are going to begin to expand our mind and open our brain a little bit more so that we can learn what is behind this energy. And it's going to make us more loving, kinder, more cautious, and also more able to like take a risk or to say, well, maybe I should follow my intuition. Maybe that's the right thing to do. Why be logical? Maybe I should just follow my intuition. And you know you'll have a better life when you do.
Right, right. And this is also important, I think, when in looking at, you know, from a documentary perspective. We go about our lives thinking, I guess, on one level that, you know, what's the end game? I mean, you live, you do things, and then you die.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't
really.
Is that
really all there is, right?
Is that all there is, right? Exactly, exactly. And I think that what makes good documentary important is that it shows us that it takes us out of our own thinking about the ordinariness of our own lives and allows us to look at the lives of others and say, well, wow, I can do that, or that could be me, or wow, I had an experience like that. And that's really what I'm talking about in terms of elevating the ordinary or into the universal, so that your own life becomes a marker, a light, a beacon that other people can follow, can see themselves in. And that's really the important thing.
What's really neat to me is that you have a company called Shiva's Karma.
Shiva
is the Lord of cutting away the negative. Shiva cuts right down to the core of the spiritual truth, the ruby in the middle of the lotus blossom that's coming up out of the mud. That's what Lord Shiva does. So I love the name Shiva's Karma, but I am so curious. I want to ask you this question. You did something called A Memoir of a Time Yet to Come. Can you please explain that sentence? That has me fascinated.
Yes. So A Memoir of a Time Yet to Come is my first ebook, and it's out on all different platforms, from Amazon to Barnes & Noble and others. But the inspiration for it really is this notion that we look at the world around us and it seems, you know, the negative, the dangerous, the awful, the man's inhumanity to man, seems like it's ever increasing on a daily basis.
You mean the nightly news?
The newspapers, precisely. And the thought that I had, where I live, I've got Harriman State Park not far from me, and I spend a lot of time in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. And while walking out there, it just hit me one day that it's not all over. It's not for naught. That there is a plan. This plan is older than we are, and it will work out. Things will, you know, the good will triumph over evil at the end.
It always does. And you know what's funny? If you start believing that, you are going to see your life change big time. When you wake up in the morning, you have a choice. You can worry about your bills. You can worry about whether you have money in the bank. You can worry about maybe not feeling well, feeling a little achy. Or you can get up and welcome the day, open your heart to the world, and say everything's going to be just fine. And the thing that everybody says is, yeah, spirit's a little slow here. It's not fast enough. Well, we're on a roller coaster ride as it is, but spirit does take its time, as it well should, because we aren't absorbing the lessons, and we have to get the lesson to get the payoff.
Exactly, exactly. That really is kind of what Memoir of a Time Yet to Come looks at. It looks at a time that's still in front of us, but we're also kind of in this time frame looking back on this future time. Because one of the things that kind of strikes me too is that we're not alone in this moment, that the past, the present, the future are all right next to us, simultaneous with us. And if we really take the time to kind of change our perspective, I think what we'll find is that what is old is new, and what's new has been done before, and there's a continuum here, a continuum of constant betterment.
We hope. Betterment, and sometimes it happens strangely.
Right.
I don't know if you've heard of David Fishberg, but he is a terrific piano player, I want to say a saloon player in New York City. And he and his wife wrote a song called Blizzard of Lies. And of course, it's what you hear from your attorneys, and it's what you hear from your movie agents and everybody in California. So I picked it to listen to for our first song. Let's listen to David Fishberg telling us about this Blizzard of Lies.
Must have lunch real soon. Your luggage is checked through. We've got inflation licked. I'll get right back to you. It's just a standard form. Tomorrow without fail. Pleased to meet you. Thanks a lot. Your check is in the mail. Marooned, marooned, marooned in a blizzard of lies. Marooned, marooned, marooned in a blizzard of lies. Nose and knees, not all you freeze when you're in it up to your thighs. It looks like snow, but you never know when you're marooned in a blizzard of lies. You may have won a prize, won't wrinkle, shrink, or peel. Your secret's safe with me, this is a real good deal. It's finger-licking good, strictly by the book. What's fair is fair, I'll be right there. I am not a crook. Maroon, maroon, maroon in a blizzard of lies. Maroon, maroon, maroon in a blizzard of lies. Better watch your step when your old dog Shep can't even look you in the eyes. You're cold and lost and you're double-crossed when you're marooned in a blizzard of lies. We'll send someone right out. Now this won't hurt a bit. He's in a meeting now. The coat's a perfect fit. Strictly fresh today. Service with a smile. I love you, darling, till I die. We'll keep your name on file. Maroon, maroon, maroon in a blizzard of lies. Maroon, maroon, maroon in a blizzard of lies. Walk on, walk on with hope in your heart. And you're in for a big surprise when you're marooned.
I'm marooned in a blizzard of lies. How about you, Don?
That's great. It's a great song. Very true.
This is Elizabeth Joyce and Let's Find Out, and I'm talking with Don Perry, who is a fabulous guy, and he also produces movies, documentaries, spiritual documentaries, and that's why we're on Let's Find Out tonight. We want to know all about it. You can call in and ask questions, especially if you want to ask about a book or some idea that you have. We're at 888-627-6008. So, Don, tell us how you develop a story, and tell us the process for creating a film, a documentary. What do you have to do?
The very first thing I think you have to do is write down your story, what it is about your life that you think is interesting. Don't worry about the form necessarily, but just get the highlights out. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing to think about is what's the takeaway? What is it that you want people to take away from having watched or interacted with your life story? And if you can keep that foremost in your mind, then I think that you're on the road, on the path to coming up with at least a good story.
It's how they handle events and how and what happened to them, and they're sharing it basically because they think that the world has had similar problems and maybe they found something new that would help them, help others.
Exactly. So think of it as if you're writing to that generation not yet born who's going to come and find this artifact long after you're gone. What is it that you want to communicate to them? What is the essential truth that you want them to walk away with?
So that's almost like leaving something behind. When Nelson Mandela was in jail all those years, he didn't realize the impact that he had had on the world, and he left something behind, even when he was in prison. And look at where he is now. You know, he's doing wonderful work.
Precisely. And this is something that we did a film about, in fact, called The 12 Disciples of Nelson Mandela, that looked not at Nelson Mandela. Everybody knows Nelson Mandela. But it's the nameless people that were working in his name to make the world aware of the plight of South Africa and to make the world understand who Nelson Mandela was.
Importance of his energy.
Exactly.
It's like somebody gets an idea. You might say, I have an idea for a new way to drive a car. I have the idea, but I do not know how to implement it. So you go and you get people that can implement it, but you're the leader because you thought of the idea.
That's it. So if you're the budding filmmaker to be, or you have a life story that you want to commemorate to film, then you have to kind of set the table, if you will. You have to let us know what it is about your life and about the experience that you've had that we should be interested in. Then, because when you talk about the process of making a documentary, it really begins with the writing. And maybe
you
I'm
said
biased.
That again. But, you know, if I know people are doing YouTube, and some of YouTube is very interesting, and some of it is just law. As you notice, you know, there's a few of them that get out there, but there's a few of them that are just so damp, or there's no energy. I'm going to say there's no energy. There's no reason to listen past the first sentence. And I think that's something to take a look at as well. So what is the digital technology and the tools to make a documentary?
Well, there was a very recent famous example of a documentary about the uprising in Egypt that was filmed entirely, or used footage that was filmed entirely on cell phones.
Wow.
And they basically, you know, got a bunch of these different snippets that people had captured. And then the second great secret of making a documentary is the editing. And they were able to edit these pieces together in a very interesting and intriguing way to tell the story of Tahrir Square and the uprising from the point of view of the young people that were there.
There's magic in that, because I have a very dear friend in New York City. His name is Ben Bryant, and he's one of the most excellent editors of film that I've ever met. But an editor of a film can look at the film footage and say, take this, and put it together and let go of the rest. And it's magic.
It is. Again, I may be a little biased because I'm on the writing side, but I think that if you've got a good script and a good editor and a good director, these are the three main elements, I think, at a bare minimum. Because a director is looking from a little point removed. They've got a different perspective. Someone telling their story is, you know, they're living that moment. They are the actor in the scene. You need some direction to be able to properly articulate your story. You need the editor, however, to really work the magic, the miracle of it all. Because,
and, you know, it's the same with books. I do book editing, but I will never forget, Don, the first time I wrote a book. And, of course, you know, you've got your baby here. Go publish it. Well, you have to publish it because it's so brilliant. You know, this is how people feel. And
right.
Then you say, the person gets on the phone and says, no, it has to be edited. What do you mean it has to be edited? It's wonderful. No, it has to be edited because you may think you're telling the story. You're feeling it with your emotions, but you're not saying it. So
right.
You have to go through line by line, comma by comma, decimal point by decimal point. People don't realize that. And now what's happened to me, of course, is I do editing. I do book editing.
Well, and with film, you have to see those actions take place. You can't explain them because film is a visual medium. So there's a little bit of a transition that has to take place, or translation. From writing things on a page to actually now making them visually interesting.
And that takes talent. That's its own talent, just like book editing, right?
Exactly. Because now you start talking about, okay, so I could film this, right? There's all sorts of digital tools. I've got my cell phone, or I've got a really nifty Canon camera that I got at B&H. All these prosumer type technologies are available, and you can make a very technically accomplished piece of work, but it still may not be a good documentary.
But, you know, what do you do about past events? What do you do? Do you use special effects all the time, or isn't that expensive? How do you recreate something from the past? Like, if you're doing a history of Nelson Mandela, you want to go back to the 50s and the 60s and bring it up to the 80s and then bring it up to current time. How would you do something like that? That's going to be hard.
It is, and it requires a variety of techniques, and it really does depend on how much money at the end of the day you have to spend, because recreations, that's a whole nother art. It requires actors, it requires costumes, it requires sets and locations, and that adds up very quickly. Part of what we do is to use archival footage. There are a number of places. You could go to Corbis, you can go to AP, you could go to the Getty Archives or the Library of Congress, the places that actually have a lot of film footage from previous eras and decades and events.
Doesn't the Getty Archives charge you? Isn't there a fee to go into the archives?
Oh, there
archives?
Are.
Okay. I want to say that too and have people understand that this isn't all for free. You have to pay them for their time of pulling it out and getting it ready for you.
Well, you're actually going to pay for the amount of that footage that you actually use in your final film. So, and it's being charged on a per minute fee. And yes, it can add up if you're going to do hours and hours of the stuff. But, for instance, we did a 15 minute, short documentary, just a very short documentary, to tell the story of, an organization and its people, that's been around for 70 years. And we used a lot of footage, as well as a lot of photographs, historic photographs, archival photographs, but our entire bill for all of that was probably less than $7,000 or $8,000.
Well, that's great. So you can work within a budget.
You can. You definitely can. You must work within a budget.
What's the least amount of money you think somebody should have before they start considering to film a documentary? $20,000, $50,000, $100,000? Oh, that's a good question, right?
Yes. A lot of it depends on the story and how involved it is to tell that story. If it's something that is, and again, you want to make it visually interesting. So what are the things you spend money on? Well, you spend money on the camera or camera person, on sound, on lighting. If you're going to have people helping you, then you're going to have production assistants. You're going to have grips to move the lighting around. So those things add up, but you could get volunteers. You could get family and friends. If you're lucky, you could keep the expenses fairly cheap. So there have been Sundance documentaries that have been made on credit cards for
$50,000. Oh, my gosh.
Right.
Just thinking of that just blows me away, because you know I want to make my documentary.
Right.
And they've done it on a credit card.
They've charged up the credit cards to the max, and $50,000 later they have a documentary. And because of the compelling story is key, and the personalities of the people on camera, they were able to actually get these things into major film festivals.
Wow. So what's the typical budget? Is there a typical budget? And how long does it take to make a good documentary?
Well, if you look at it from the perspective of a good documentary, I mean, things like Ed Burns and the Civil War, that was in excess of $15 million.
My goodness.
So a lot of the things that independent documentarians like ourselves are doing, we have budgets that range on average between $1 to $1.5 million for hour-long documentaries.
Well, now that we've talked about the ins and outs and the finances of it, I want to know how you get started. And we're going to ask you a couple of other questions after that, but we have to listen to our station break and our commercials first. We'll be back. This is Elizabeth Joyce on Let's Find Out. My guest tonight is Don Perry, and we're talking about the movies.
The Bucks County Metaphysical Association, BCMA, is a nonprofit organization focused on teaching love, self-care, and self-responsibility by sharing our talents with others to enhance and serve the community. The BCMA does this by providing holistic health care and metaphysical programs, by keeping people informed about issues that affect the health and welfare of the community, and by generating lectures and events to support the local Bucks County charities. We're beginning our fourth year of community service and are known as the Metaphysical Education Center of Bucks County. Please join us for our upcoming lectures and events. Not only will it be informative, fun, networking, and community sharing, but you will also be supporting some wonderful charities. We look forward to seeing many of you on the third Wednesday night of every month at 7 p.m. at the Circle of Miracles Church, 10 Beulah Road, New Britain Township in PA. For a list of our charities, please visit our website, www.thebcma.net.
Wisdom Magazine is one of the East Coast's largest free publications, with more than 1,000 distributed bimonthly in three regional areas, New England, New York City and New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Wisdom is dedicated to opening the people's hearts and minds to the philosophy, products, and services of the new millennium, bringing love, peace, and positive information into the community. Elizabeth writes the astrology column for Wisdom, as well as a weekly astrology update for the Wisdom Magazine website. Visit us at wisdom-magazine.com to view our web edition. The X-Zone is a late-night internationally syndicated radio, television, satellite, and internet talk show, which deals with a variety of subjects, but usually ones that relate to the world of the paranormal, metaphysics, and the science of parapsychology. It was created by the Canadian broadcaster Rob McConnell and first aired in 1993. The X-Zone airs 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday, from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern Time, and is distributed internationally by the X-Zone Broadcast Network. It is hosted by the show's creator and executive producer, Rob McConnell. The X-Zone radio show is located in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. The X-Zone radio and TV show is the only Canadian radio show that is syndicated to a truly international listening and viewing audience via conventional professional broadcasting and satellite means, not only the internet. The X-Zone is syndicated on an international basis outside of Canada and has more than 400,000 listeners as an international audience. Listen for Elizabeth Joyce and Rob McConnell on the X-Zone at www.xzoneradiotv.com. Opening your spiritual chakras is the next stage of your physical body's shifting reality. Your body is now merging with your etheric or universal body and the new spiritual chakra centers. You will begin to experience a realm of many vibrant prismatic colors and dancing energy patterns will emerge. By opening your spiritual chakras and merging with your universal body, you will come together in marvelous ways, and new spiritual powers will begin to emerge into your body system. The chakras are your major energy centers, and they allow you to transform your physical body and integrate with its spiritual body to function properly in the new fifth dimension energies. To accomplish these complex intertwining procedures, the spiritual hierarchy intends to bring forth 4 additional chakras as soon as possible: the 8th, the 8.5, the 9th, and the 10th. These 4 new chakra centers will permit you to manage the immensity of multidimensional information inherent to your new physical body. The physical body will be walking in sync with the universal body. In addition, the 4 spiritual chakras will transform the other 7, thereby allowing them to take on many new responsibilities. Elizabeth Joyce has created a new CD to help you open your spiritual chakras. This is very valuable and is one of the primary ways needed
for you to begin the ascension process and work well in the fifth dimension energies that are now coming onto the planet. In addition to the four spiritual chakras and the seven regular physical chakras, there is an extra chakra, the foot chakra, or the zero chakra. This is your earth grounding center, and it is located at the balls of your feet. Above the crown chakra are four more numbers, 8, 10, 11, and 12. The main purpose of these extended chakras, which has always been a part of the energetic field, including our aura, is to enable the individual to tune into his or her inner God self, the divine will, and even the galactic community that surrounds and supports the earth in its evolution. This is a CD that you will want to have and work with on a daily basis between now and December 21st, 2012. It is available here at bbsradio.com under the Let's Find Out page, as well as Elizabeth Joyce's personal website, www.new-vision.com. Be sure to get the CD, Opening Your Spiritual Chakras, with music by Richard Schulman, so that you can advance yourself and find security in these new, wonderful fifth dimension energies. Again, that's www.new-visions.com or bbsradio.com under Let's Find Out.
You're listening to Let's Find Out on bbsradio.com, station one. If internet radio has a name, it's BBS Radio, the number one live internet radio talk show on the planet. Let's Find Out and our honored guests come to us every other Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern and 6 p.m. Pacific. If you would like to call in and ask a question, please dial 888-627-6008 in the U.S. and Canada. Again, that's 888-627-6008. Now, if you're just tuning in and would like to hear this show in its entirety, a podcast will be available tomorrow, and you can download it at the archive link at bbsradio.com. Remember, if it's not mainstream, it's BBS Radio. So now, let's find out with our host, Elizabeth Joyce.
Ascension. Accessing the Fifth Dimension, The Truth About 2012. This is a new book by Elizabeth Joyce. People are being shaken awake. Sometimes it takes a kick in the pants to wake us up. Looking from a higher perspective, we are experiencing birth pangs of a higher consciousness, the fifth dimension. The three spatial dimensions of height, width, and length, along with the fourth dimension of time and timelessness, we are familiar with. But what is the fifth dimension energies? Mark Dodich, astrologer, says, if you are opening to a greater spiritual dimension of your inner self, then this is the book for you. Ascension. How to access the fifth dimension. Go to www.new-visions.com or amazon.com and get the book. It's a must read.
Say the neon lights are bright on Broadway. They say there's always magic in the air. But when you're walking down that street and you ain't had enough to eat, the glitter rubs right off and you're nowhere. They say the girls are something else on Broadway. Oh, but looking at them just gives me the blues. I ask you, how you gonna make some time when all you got is one thin dime, and one thin dime won't even shine your shoes. Ain't that a fact? They say that I won't last too long on Broadway. I'm gonna catch me a Greyhound bus for home, they say. Oh, but they're wrong, I know they are. cause I can play this here guitar, and I won't quit till I'm a star on Broadway. They say that I won't land.
That was my friend Bobby Darin, and a very, very rare recording that he made that isn't as popular as a lot of his others, and it's called On Broadway. Tonight, my guest is Don Perry on Let's Find Out, and we are finding out about making films, making documentaries, and eventually hoping to get to Broadway. We're going to go and say hi to Bobby. Anyway, here we are, Don. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And I wanted to talk about how long does it take to make a good documentary, and how do you get started with the writing?
Yes. The biggest myth about documentaries is that they're quick. A good documentary takes a lot of time to research. So it's not even just your life. It's the lives of other people who are going to help to tell that story. Trying to figure out who the other on-camera people are going to be, what role they're going to play, a little bit about their backgrounds, looking at some of the events that shaped the life, and trying to understand, you know, how they formed the context in which that life has unfolded. So research is a big part of it. There's a whole lot of archival research, looking for relevant writings, relevant photographs, relevant film clips, other people who had similar experience at the same time, in order to try to filter those voices into to create a very good visual scape, a visual landscape against which the narrative of your life takes place. So
how did you get started in writing and producing films? I mean, you were in finance, weren't you?
Yes, but I was kind of fortunate in that in finance, I was an analyst. I did a lot of analysis.
Oh, so you know and about research.
You know about research and you know about writing, because there's really kind of two kinds of analysts. There are analysts who do all that research, but they can't express what it is they found. And then there are analysts who have the gift of writing. And they're able to write, but they may not be very good at researching. I was fortunate; I could do both.
That is fortunate.
And writing, you know, for kind of technical, business oriented, finance oriented, it's still the same thing. You're telling a story. You have a beginning, a middle, an end. You have to make it interesting. You have to deal with the facts, and you have to lay them out in some kind of logical order. I'd say that the biggest difference is that it's boring because everything in finance is linear.
Correct.
And everything that I'm doing now, it has almost no rules.
It's creative. It's creative.
It's creative.
So that means it's got unlimited possibilities.
Exactly. Exactly.
What's your biggest challenge so far?
Well, the biggest challenge so far is that financially – finance is a lot better paying than being an independent film.
Ouch. Oh, we knew that.
Yes.
In fact, Les Paul will tell you that. Les Paul, of course, invented the voiceover and the playover and the eight-string guitar and everything. And, I mean, he really struggled way back when. I knew him personally because he lived in my neighborhood.
Wow. It is true that you know, the creative ventures you're doing it on faith. And for me, it's like I've done finance for so long that there really weren't any challenges that I felt that I was interested in. It was no longer holding my attention. And I'd always written on the side as just kind of a hobby for me. And so the way I got started basically was I had a client, Chimpanzee Productions, that wanted to develop. It was just a kind of a one man show at that point. He had made a number of small, short documentaries, and he was really beginning to look toward trying to develop the company into something more substantial. And I took that on as just a side challenge while I was doing my other consulting work. But he started having trouble with a script for Amiyakara, That's My Face, which is a personal documentary about one man's journey in search of his identity and mm-hmm. a sense of roots.
So what was the problem?
How to tell that story in an interesting way.
Oh.
So I took...
I guess you did well with it, did you not?
Yeah, it worked out very well. We took that to a number of film festivals. It debuted at the Toronto Film Festival. It went to Sundance. It also did Berlin and Tribeca Film Festivals.
That's great.
Great number of awards. But part of the thing with writing that is that here's now a non-linear structure that involves the intersection of one life with that of his mother and that of his grandfather. So it became parallel journeys taken at different points in time.
Well, but films can do that. They certainly can get away with that. You can have flashbacks and everything, and that's good.
Right. And that's what people, I think, in telling their stories, they need to think of it in that way. It doesn't have to be a linear, first there was this, and then there was that, and I was five, yeah. and then I was seven.
I know that's more of the novel thing. It's in film, you do have a lot of leeway to branch out and then bring it back in, and that's good. I want to ask you, what is your greatest triumph so far? What makes you keep going?
I think the greatest triumph is that every film project that we complete kind of sets us up for the next one, and they keep getting more and more and more complex. And we've just finished our most ambitious project to date. It's a 90-minute documentary called Through a Lens Darkly, Black Photographers and the Emergence of the People. And it tells the story of photography through the lens of people who haven't really been given their proper due, if you will.
Do you have a website for that, that we can tell people where they could get more information, the website?
Yes, for that film, the film itself, it's throughalensdarkly.tv. It's all one word.
All one word. Through, T-H-R-O-U-G-H, a lens, L-E-N-S, darkly, dot?
TV.
TV. Great. Right. And you also have your own website for Chimpanzee Productions. What is that?
Yes. So the Chimpanzee Productions site is ChimpanzeeProductions with an S .com.
Oh, that's easy. That's easy. And you said that they could look at your book, this A Memoir of Time Yet to Come. There's another one that we didn't discuss, and that's Last Things. And these are both novellas, correct?
Right, right. I tend to write for people like myself who are rather busy, and we don't have time to pour 100 pages.
Sure.
But you still want to have a satisfying read, and that's really what I try to put together.
That's great. And the one that caught my eye was this Building an Arc Towards Justice. I have an interest in that because I love anything about justice and balance.
Yes. We could take this documentary form and apply it to anything. So from mm-hmm. personal documentaries and what we try to do in telling the story of an organization, in this case, the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, was to look at them as a living, breathing, vibrant entity mm-hmm. That has played a pivotal role throughout its existence in advancing civil rights, not just for African Americans, but for all people.
Right. They have done that. And that's so wonderful.
Yeah. And they can find the LDF. It's on the NAACP LDF.org website.
Great. So where can we contact you after the show?
I think the best way to contact me is at dperry, P-E-R-R-Y, at shivas-karma.com.
And that hyphen is in there. Don't forget, that's the little dash you put between phone numbers. It's Shivas, S-H-I-V-A-S, hyphen, karma, K-A-R-M-A.com, correct?
That's it.
Well, that's exactly. Wonderful. It's been wonderful having you on, Don. I really have enjoyed this so much. We're going to hear something from Mama Cass, and this is way back. This was in the 60s when they were starting to rebel with everything, but it taught us that we are creative people and that we can trust our intuition and our imagination and put it together and make something wonderful. Just to prove it, Mama Cass wrote this song. And here we go. It's Make Your Own Kind of Music.
Nobody can tell you, there's only one song worth singing. They may try and sell you, 'cause it hangs them up to see someone like you. But you've gotta make your own kind of music, sing your own special song. Make your own kind of music, even if nobody else sings along. You're gonna be nowhere, the loneliest kind of lonely. It may be rough going just to do your thing, the hardest thing to do. But you gotta make your own kind of music, sing your own special song. Make your own kind of music, even if nobody else sings along. So if you cannot take my
And that was Mama Cathy, Make Your Own Kind of Music. This is Elizabeth Joyce on Let's Find Out. Our guest tonight has been Don Perry, and we've been talking about documentaries, film, making your own kind of movies. Next week, our guest will be Carl Rodriguez from Clapton, London, and he's going to be talking about life balancing, and he is an ascension coach, so he's helping work with these new energies. Don, it's been wonderful having you, and I hope that you'll be back with us again shortly.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Again, you can reach him at shivas-karma.com, correct?
Right, and my email address is dperry@shivas-karma.
That's what I forgot. Thank you very much. We're going to go into the meditation now, and good night. It's been wonderful, and we'll be back on the 28th of January with Carl Rodriguez. Good night.
Sit with both feet flat on the floor. Lean back and relax. Take a deep breath. Release the breath. Sit with your spine straight. And we are going to begin the Sat Nam. You turn your head to the left for the word Sat. You come back to the center. Then you turn your head to the right for Nam. Sat Nam means with God. It's Sanskrit. We're going to do this exercise 16 times. Sat Nam. 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 Take a deep breath and hold. Release the breath. Now I want you to start breathing from your solar plexus. Breathe in and out very quickly. This is called the breath of fire. And we will do this for 30 seconds to 1 minute. It's good for you to get this exercise up to 3 minutes if possible, but that can take almost a year to do. So let's begin with the breath of fire. Keep it going. Almost there. Take a deep breath and hold. Now I want you to begin the ring of fire. Picture a huge fire ring around the top of your head, and we're going to bring it down over the body. Let's burn away your negativity. Bring down the ring of fire. Bring it down over the body, around the hips, down the legs, and throw it into the center of the earth. We'll do this two more times. Ring of fire, around the top of the head, down the shoulders, around the body, down the legs, and throw it into the center of the earth. Ring of fire, above the top of the head, down the shoulders, around the body, around the hips, down the legs, and throw it into the center of the earth. Now be still for a moment, closing your eyes. Do not open your eyes during a meditation, because that breaks the circuit, the electrical circuit that you're building. We're going to start working the chakras. So we're going to do swirling wheels of light. And we'll picture the color red. We'll have a swirling wheel of light, and it will come in to the third eye, and it will be placed down at the bottom of your spine. And it always swirls in a clockwise position. So bring in the root chakra, swirling whirl of red light. Place it at the base of your spine. The root chakra represents fidelity, loyalty, strength, and service. Now we'll picture an orange swirl of light. Bring that into the body and down and place it above the root chakra. This is your second chakra, or your health chakra. Swirling orange light. And the words for the second chakra are receiving and creativity. Now we're going to picture a larger circle of green light. This is the solar plexus, and it is the largest chakra on the body. Bring the green swirling wheel into your third eye and bring it down and place it behind your navel. This is your solar plexus chakra. And the words to put into your solar plexus chakra are gut feeling reaction, integrity, the will, and knowing what to do. The root chakra is the last yang chakra. Now we go to the heart center. So we'll bring in a yellow swirling wheel of light, always going in a clockwise position, and it's going to come in right at your heart. Bring in this beautiful yellow light. Yellow wheel of swirling light is your heart center. And this brings you joy, happiness, laughter, and good feelings. Also, forgiveness is at the heart center. So let that wheel turn for you along with the others in a perfectly balanced harmony. Now we'll begin with the yin chakras. Picture a swirling light blue wheel of light and bring that into the throat center, which is a little bit below the neck, just at your clavicle. So let's see this beautiful swirling blue light. And the words for the throat chakra are sincerity, clarity, abundance, affluence, as well as discernment. So let that come in. And then we'll start the dark blue indigo light for the third eye. And we'll swirl that wheel, and we'll bring that right into the third eye. Feel that swirling around you. Feel your third eye perhaps throbbing a bit. The third eye represents your freedom. The third eye is where you watch your etheric body go out of you and go other places to do other things. This is where you witness the out-of-body experience as well as your past lives and your astral projection. The words for the third eye are freedom, knowledge, wisdom, and clarity. And that is the third eye. And now we'll go on to the crown center. Picture a beautiful violet silver light coming into your top of your head. This is the crown center, and the light is coming down from the divine. And this is opening up your thousand petal lotus blossom at the top of your head. And the words for the crown chakra are bliss, grace, immortality. And this is what joins you to your blessed higher self as well as your soul school. Open up the crown chakra and allow the chakti energies to come in through the body and go down through all the chakras down to your root chakra. Sit for a minute and let the chakra wheels spin. Now very carefully, I want you to go into the root chakra and push it up to the second chakra, up to the solar plexus, up to the heart center, up to the throat center, and push the chakras out through your third eye, release the chakras back into the universe to do their recharging for you. And now let's bring down that thousand petal lotus blossom out through the third eye and release the chakra out into the universe so it can recharge for you when you're ready to work your chakras again. And now you can just sit and surround yourself with white light. Surround yourself with white light as much as you can. You're inside an egg. Picture that. And picture this wall coming around you that's very, very, very thick. Very thick white light wall. This is your wall of protection, and you will use it throughout the day to protect you, to guide you, as well as to keep any negativity off of your body. It will just bounce off of your auric shield. So sit and build your auric shield. And when you are finished, please thank Spirit by saying, God grant me health, protection, and guidance. Thank you, Spirit. And then it's always best to sit for a few minutes and let your mind and your feelings, as well as your blessed higher self, wander out there in the universe, just in case there's a message to be brought back to you. So sit for another few moments, and then do some deep breathing. Take a deep breath, take another deep breath, and allow yourself to come back into the room. You have just cleared yourself of negativity and worked your chakras.